Quite often, we hold museums in a special category, as if the objects and dust they accumulate are part of a magical, intellectual realm rarely understood by ordinary people. However, across the museum field, I have found that the staff behind the public displays are creative and down-to-earth, and they enjoy their daily work in service to you and the collections they care for. This is Erin Jones, Director of the Museum and Gallery of Bob Jones University, with M&G's podcast called Art Break. This month's focus takes us on location to the Georgia Museum of Art in Athens, Georgia, in order to enhance your understanding of closing and opening an art exhibition. Speaking from personal experience, it's stressful and nerve-wracking to open an exhibition. The myriad details and logistics of collaborating with various people to plan and complete an exhibition from start to finish can be daunting. To give you a sense of what it requires, let's listen to two perspectives. First, the museum lender.
I'm Rebecca Cobb, M&G's registrar.
And second, the museum borrower.
I'm Nelda Damiano, the Pierre Dora Curator of European Art at the Georgia Museum of Art.
So since this is a big topic, I think maybe a good start to just help shape our focus for our conversation really is Nelda in particular. What is the point of even having an exhibition? I mean, why do museums invest the time and the resources into featuring them?
Exhibitions are usually put together essentially to tell a story or to illuminate, explain, interpret a specific period of time or a specific place in the history of art. We also want to try to highlight a theme or a media. Essentially, what museums are trying to do is to connect with people through stories. We could go a little bit more into details, but maybe I can refer to the one we're still hosting.
Yes.
Until November 8th from your museum. And so it is called Drama and Devotion in Baroque Rome, and it really focused on one of the most creative period in the history of art in one of the busiest places in the world, Rome. Rome was pretty much a cultural hub in the 16th century and 17th century. All artists went to Rome, and this exhibition that you still have a chance to see until November 8th really focuses on showing the visitor and reminding us how artists from different countries flocked to the city, and especially to see something extraordinary that was happening, namely a revolution of sort by Caravaggio, Italian painter who influenced so many painters and who, I'm not overstating this, really presented a new way of painting and inspired a whole generation.
So with exhibitions, maybe even explain, are there different types of exhibitions that museums do? And just may explain some of those differences, because, you know, when you visit a museum, you don't always know what to expect in an exhibition, and you could be disappointed maybe because you had an expectation, but it would help to know if there are differences and why those exist.
Right. So I have to say right off the bat that creating exhibitions, working on exhibitions, is probably the most fun for a curator. So obviously it is a big part of my job, and it is one that I really enjoy with the research and with the contact with our audience. There are different types of exhibitions that serve different purposes. You have survey exhibitions. So for example, something that would be Impressionism in the United States, or Picasso, Renaissance women painters. That's another thing that kind of tries to show the visitor a huge representation and as many examples as possible of that given period or movement. Then we have focus exhibitions. So focus exhibitions vary in size and in scope. It could be something like the early years in Monet's artistic career. It could be something like what we have right now at the Georgia Museum of Art, which is a series called In Dialogue, and where we really do an installation where we highlight one painting or one work from our collection and we put it in dialogue with other works of the collection to kind of focus the visitor's attention on a given theme. Again, I think that the variety of exhibitions, from survey exhibitions to focus exhibitions to monographic exhibition, is an attempt for museums to stir interest in the visitor. People are looking for different things when they go to museum. They also have, of course, different interests. They also have different amount of time they can spend in a museum.
Right.
Some have little children running around that might pull you away. Some have more time. You also have different audiences in terms of the university students, the general public, the scholars. So I think that all exhibitions are built to be enjoyed by everyone, but everyone experiences them in a different way.
That's good. That's very helpful to understand some of that as we do look at exhibitions as a museum guest in particular. So, Rebecca, these exhibitions, who really initiates them, and really what is the entire process for the exhibit and handling loans?
Sure. For us, obviously every museum usually initiates its own exhibitions, and when they are going through that process, they'll decide what of their own collection they want to incorporate, but what in other collections, whether nationally or internationally, actually fits the best within that type of exhibition. And so we often get requests. Usually it comes as a letter or an email, and it details to us what the overall project is, the topic, the projected exhibition dates, which piece or pieces they would like to use, and why, how it fits within the grand scheme of the exhibit. In Nelda's case, I don't know exactly how we got started, but we kind of just have been emailing back and forth. So it's been a little less formal, which has been great as we've gotten to work with each other, and just the back and forth is great. Usually once we receive a request, I send it to the director, which is Erin, and she reviews it, and in some cases we'll review it with the board. And once it's approved, then I get back with the requester, and either through email, like with Nelda, yeah, sure, that's great, or internationally we've done, we send a formal letter that, so they have in writing the approval, and then it has all my details on it so that we can start getting the process going.
So with these loans, and this maybe is really more for both of you because you're bringing two different perspectives, are there any special considerations for paintings, since we're primarily talking about paintings, to participate in an exhibition?
Mm-hmm. I'll go first.
Yes, go ahead.
I mean, one of the first things is that if for a particular painting for us, from the lender side, it has to be in good enough condition to withstand traveling and exhibition and shipment. And some of our paintings, particularly panel paintings, are often too fragile to go anywhere because of their sensitivity to temperature and humidity, as well as movement. But the second thing I think that Nelda and I have run into is it has to be available. It can't be committed to another project. So I know in the couple exhibitions we've been working on together, a couple of the pieces that we had were already, that Nelda would have loved to have, were already committed to another project. And in fact, though, it kind of worked out. One of the pieces for the newest show that's going to open is coming a little bit later, but it's coming down from an exhibit at the Museum of the Bible, and then it will come here to the Georgia Museum of Art.
Yes, so I agree with you, Rebecca. One of the things that people need to remember is that exhibitions are always start off as a wish list. So an exhibition is always planned around a wish list, And then an exhibition always becomes a compromise. So I want to stress that. And this is normal. It's part of the process. It's something we learn to accept and deal with. And one of the possible obstacles or restriction is what Rebecca mentioned, availability, and also the condition of the work, because that always trumps everything else. We can have, as a curator, a masterpiece or some work of art that we're so keen on having in our exhibition because we feel it really illustrates our point. But if we get an answer from a museum saying it is too fragile to travel, it cannot sustain the shipment, it cannot, be hung on your wall, that is the only time I won't try to appeal a decision and I will, back down, because it is always the paramount, the safety of the work. And another thing that we consider when we put together an exhibition is something very banal, but it is real estate. Do we actually have the room, the wall space to hang this painting? And in both the exhibition, Drama and Devotion in Baroque Rome, and the upcoming one on Spanish paintings, there are some very monumental paintings that have forced me to stop, convert the inches or meters or feet into metric system, because I'm Canadian and so I use that, and go check with our designer and say, how big is our wall? And so that is another thing that is so obvious, but it is fundamental. You don't want to borrow a work of art and have to build a new wall or a new museum to welcome it.
I would say, related to size on the lender's part, is the borrower might have the real estate to house it, but it may be a type of work that is too large to even fit in a truck to get here. There are some works that they can turn on their sides and travel on their sides for a short period of time, but then there are some, like wooden panels, that have to remain vertical. So if a vertical crate will not fit in the truck, then that piece isn't gonna go.
Yes, and making sure also that it fits through the doors of the museum.
Yes. Yes.
You don't want surprises when the work shows up. Let's just put it that way.
That is so true. All right, so as Nelda mentioned, both she and Becca are working on at least two exhibitions. So one with M&G Works here currently that are being dismantled and packed at the Georgia Museum, and then one that is arriving from M&G to be unpacked and installed. So maybe then the two of you, let's just get to the practical elements, once an exhibition is planned. And so with Becca, how are M&G's paintings, how are they prepared to even come?
Our process starts, because we don't have any kind of conservation specialist on staff, we have a conservator who does freelance work, and he will come in and examine the works to determine their fitness for travel and just recommend any treatments that might need to be done. If for some reason it is too fragile, he'll note that and we'll have to go back to the drawing board on that. But once he's sort of assessed all of those requested works and prepared his report, I use that information then to determine, based on his recommendation, what type of crate, what's the best way for them to travel. And there's most often they're packed in a museum, what we call a museum crate. So it's like a large wooden box that houses the painting for shipment. And there are a couple of different types of ones. There's a full museum crate where the painting is completely enclosed. There's often foam lining the inside, or it has an inner frame that the painting is mounted to. So then that inner frame just slides into the overall crate. Occasionally, which we've actually used a couple of travel, what we might call travel frames for this exhibit, because it's only a couple hours drive, there are a couple of paintings that aren't super sensitive, so they can come in a travel frame, which doesn't have quite the amount of climate control that a full crate would have, but it still is secure in the crate and it costs a little bit less. So then that's always something we're looking at, is the budget, what fits into the budget and what's safest for the work. And there are a couple of different options for actually packing a painting. A lot of museums have art preparators on their staff that are trained to handle paintings or objects and know the mechanics of packing those works. Occasionally you can have like an art handling company come in and pack the works as well, which was the case when M&G had 64 works going to the Museum of the Bible. We had the art packing company, handling company come in, and they basically, we assisted, but they basically did a lot of the work themselves because they were just a lot quicker. So most paintings that we send out are also, from a practical standpoint, are wrapped in a material called Dartek. So it's like plastic wrap in a way, but it's not quite as clingy, and it's an acid-free substance so that we're protecting the work from acid. It also helps create sort of this climate control barrier, as well as protecting from dust and any kind of debris that might come loose within the crate. And if something does chip off the frame or something happens during travel, you can see the particles within the Dartek, so you know something's happened. As you're unwrapping it, you can see that.
So maybe just walk us through one painting. How long would it take for you to, you know, wrap it, pack it, put it in the crate, seal the crate?
It really varies based on the size. A small painting might take us 30 minutes to 2 hours, depending on if we have to do anything to the crate to modify it. 30 minutes if the crate's all set and ready to go, we just wrap it really quickly and stick it in. For larger works, it can take a lot longer, especially if we're wrapping, you know, a 9-foot painting in Dartek. That's quite a challenge because you want the Dartek to be tight, but you also still want it to have a little bit of movement. So, I mean, it's taken us like a half a day before on larger works, especially if we have to add hardware to the back so that it can be hung in the crate or mounted in the crate so that it won't move.
So basically preparing for an exhibition is no quick effort. It just takes many days and weeks and months for the process.
And all of that, of course, to make sure the work is safe and leaves, you know, one point safely and arrives safely to its destination.
All right, so then describe how, once the painting, it's crated and it's ready to go, how is it even transported, like this 9-foot painting you're talking about?
Yes, well, regionally, there are, as I mentioned previously, there are art handling companies, and they have special trucks that are what we call climate controlled, so we can control the temperature and the humidity during its travel, but they're also what we would call air ride. So that helps minimize it sort of absorbs the shock of driving down the road and helps minimize the movement of the crates within the truck and even the paintings within the crates. International loans typically require a combination. You'll might have it in a truck to the airport and then it will be loaded on the plane. I've not had the privilege to do any international loans yet, but our previous registrar has had some interesting stories about getting the painting from the tarmac onto the plane.
All right, so that's all the preparation from the lender side. So Nelda, then, what are you doing then as the borrower, right? Before the works even arrive for the exhibition, what are you doing? And then what do you do once the art does arrive?
Once we have the green light that we are getting this work of art, that it's been approved and we've celebrated and we're really happy, the main thing that the curator does, along with the installation team made of the designer and the art handlers, is really to start the planning process. And by that I mean, how will the exhibition be laid out in the galleries? Where will these paintings go on which wall? that is also a very fun part when you get to determine the color of the walls, the font you're going to use, kind of give the exhibition a personality, a flavor. And I don't do that. I mean, I give my opinion and then it is ignored. But no, I do. We have a very collaborative team. And so for this exhibition on Spanish painting, for instance, there is one painting of the Annunciation that has a very beautiful detail. And one of the recurrent motifs that I would see in these paintings, not only the ones we have here, that we'll have here from your collection, is a lily, a white lily. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to repurpose that motif and put it on the title wall. So we do the kind of these graphic treatments to make it more visually appealing, but also to, yes, give it a personality. It reflects what the exhibition is about. So designing the exhibition is a huge thing. Also, we need to make sure, in this case, it's pretty straightforward. Are paintings, we're going to hang them on the wall, but sometimes you will have objects, 3D objects, so that will require vitrines and cases and pedestals. So we're really, on our end, we're waiting and preparing the galleries to welcome these wonderful works of art.
All right, and then for some of these really practical listeners, how is the art actually hung? I mean, because some of them are so big. In fact, there's one I know that is coming that is pretty large.
Yes.
So what do you do to get it on the wall?
Well, one thing I want to reassure the listeners, curators are not involved in the actual hanging. And I say this especially for me because I'm quite clumsy, so I stay away with great admiration for the work our team does. But it goes into preparation. We have a pretty good team here in terms of number. We have 4 preparators, but I've worked in museums where we have more and sometimes we have less. If we are preparing for a pretty big work of art and you feel, again, in the planning stages that you don't have enough arms to help you, you're gonna hire external help. So in a previous job, there was one painting that was just gigantic, probably 12 feet tall, and we were just a team of 4 and we hired 6 extra pretty strong people to help us with it. So it's really in the planning stages when I talk about design, it's also, okay, do we have the resources to put these paintings on the wall? What else do we need? Do we need extra help? And there is, even in this current exhibition of Baroque Rome, there is one painting that is pretty impressive in terms of size. And you're happy once it's secured on the wall. Let's just put it that way.
So then maybe could you just give us a range for maybe how long it takes to install an exhibition? And maybe same for even dismantling an exhibition and, you know, and maybe why it is that it takes that long?
It goes a little bit back to what Rebecca said in terms of it varies for the packing and the shipping. Installation period and deinstallation periods vary according to how many works of art do I have in this exhibition. You know, for this current exhibition, we'll have 5 paintings. We've allotted ourselves, you know, the whole week, but that is to welcome the paintings, open the crates, do what we call the condition report. That is just to make sure that the painting got here in the same conditions that it left your museum, and then hanging it. So we reserved a week, but some exhibitions, I've worked on exhibitions that had more than 100 works, that will take 2-3 weeks of straight up installation. The nature of the exhibition also impacts the length of the installation. When you're dealing with 2D objects, so paintings and drawings, it's pretty straightforward. You hang them on the wall. When you're dealing with sculptures, 3D objects, pieces of jewelry, textile, anything like that, it requires more handling, manipulation, setting them up in cases, putting the bonnet, what we call, you know, the top of the vitrine, securing them. So depending really on the type of art you're dealing with or object, it will really impact your installation time. Sometimes you're you're done in a week. Sometimes it takes you a month.
Well, for the both of you, though, do you have any interesting experiences or maybe just some anecdotes that you can share about any past or current loans that you've been involved in? Maybe a courier, maybe it's installing. What do you have?
Well, I think when you're in this field, you end up collecting interesting stories that we can't always reveal. But so I have had some memorable courier trip. One where I went from Ottawa, Canada to LA, so from the National Gallery of Canada in Ottawa to the Hammer Museum in LA by truck, because like Rebecca said, if you can truck it, you do it instead of flying it. It's safer for the artwork. And that was a nice 50-hour truck ride. And so I was really happy to get to the hotel room after all those hours, because even though you have air ride and climate control, you don't really sleep on the truck. So that was very interesting.
One, on a more practical level, I went out to the San Diego Museum of Art. They had borrowed actually one of the paintings that is coming for this next newest installment here at the Georgia Museum. And one thing I had never thought about, because we live over here on the East Coast, is they had to add some special hardware to the back of the painting frame because of how they were going to hang it on the wall to accommodate the possibility of earthquakes. Mm-hmm. So that was just something I had never really even considered, because earthquakes aren't a huge thing over this way, but that was just fascinating to me.
And then I also have to underscore how it is also a privilege. It's nice when you end up meeting your colleagues with whom you've had 10,000 emails exchanged, so it's very rewarding. It's also rewarding when you are installing. You get to have a special access to these works of art. And when I worked on an exhibition of Van Gogh paintings, it was something very moving and emotional to be able to look at a Van Gogh painting with no one else around, or barely, and also to see it just lying on a table without a vitrine, like without not being glazed, and just see the thickness of the paint and just see the vibrancy of the color and everything that, you know, makes Van Gogh Van Gogh and makes us love his art. And it's just this privileged access that, yeah, it just makes it really worthwhile and makes you grateful to be in this field.
Mm-hmm. It is really, echoing what Nelda said, it's been so exciting to sort of see behind the scenes. I see what we do at our own museum, but it's just a wonderful learning opportunity to see how other museums, how other professionals in the field operate, what they do, because you can always learn something that, yes, a process or a procedure or some kind of great product that you didn't know about that can enhance what you do at your museum. And I've also really appreciated the camaraderie, how everyone is more than willing to share their knowledge, and even then just seeing things up close and personal that the normal museum guest has to stay, 6 feet back. You actually, as it's being installed, can get a close look, which is just really exciting.
And I think too, being able to, you know, see your museum's painting on display in another museum, they almost become like children, right, or siblings to you, because you know them so well hanging on your museum's walls. But seeing it elsewhere and in a new light, a different setting, even that can be very emotional too. Mm-hmm. You realize maybe new things about the painting. It reveals new things.
For us at the museum and gallery, the paintings have basically hung in the same position in the same room for decades. And so seeing them, as Aaron was saying, seeing them come here on even just a different color wall, it really transforms your experience to something you've been looking at day in and day out. And, you know, like you were saying, it just gives you a whole fresh perspective on your own and appreciation and love for the works that you've seen.
So when you open an exhibition, I mean, it's exciting because you finally got to opening day. Yes. But part of that excitement really is the guest response. Maybe you can share, either of you, any opening moments from an exhibition you've participated in, whether it's, you know, the current one or some other in your time at the museums.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the, this has happened a few times, but it always surprises me when I have a visitor tell me that they've really enjoyed the labels and all the wall text of the exhibition, because my first instinct is, you read all that? Okay. And then my second thought is, thank you, because writing labels and panels and interpretive text is really hard, because you're trying to encapsulate, you know, all this essential information, trying not to be too long, too boring, get to the essential, you know, message. And so I'm always pleased when I have visitors tell me that these texts have enhanced their visit, and I'm very grateful. And another thing also that I've experienced, had a chance to work on exhibition of contemporary art and meeting artists, and that is another really rewarding part of my job, is when you open an exhibition and the artist is there and you really see celebration of their work and celebration of their talent, and they can actually participate and they witness it, and it's just very endearing and rewarding for everyone.
All right, so we've talked through a number of things that help us and the listener to understand the scope of the work that it takes to have an exhibition. So then maybe let's just go ahead and shift to the incoming exhibit that you'll be installing. So Becca, so let's start with, what is the largest work in this new exhibition?
That is an excellent question. We actually have two rather large works coming in this exhibition, but the largest one is a painting called St. Catherine of Alexandria, Appearing to the Family of St. Bonaventura. And this is by an artist named Herrera. And this painting is approximately 9 feet tall by 7.5 feet wide. So to visualize, I know I'm a very visual person, so someone can say, this is 9 feet by 7 feet, and I might have no idea what that actually looks like. So it's a couple feet larger than your average king-size bed. So a king-size bed is usually around 6.5 feet by 6 feet-ish. This is a couple feet, add a couple feet to the height and the width of your king-size bed, and that is the size of the St. Catherine painting.
That's maybe good. Maybe a California king.
Yeah, that's maybe. Exactly, exactly.
But do not lie down on this.
Yes.
No. And it's heavier, too.
It is extremely heavy. In fact, I warned the preparators today. I said, just want you to be aware, this is going to be very heavy, so you can be mentally prepared.
Yeah. All right, so Nelda, with this exhibition, are there any artists or paintings you think are worth noting, maybe you just want to draw attention to?
Right. Well, for us here at the Georgia Museum of Art, we're really happy to have this exhibition because we don't have examples of Spanish 17th century art. So that's one thing we're really happy, and that is something that we can now share with our audiences here who will walk through our doors. Of course, I like all the artists in the exhibition because I chose them. But I have a soft spot or a special mention for Zurbaran and Murillo. Zurbaran was younger than Murillo, but they both really met with great success in Sevilla, in Spain, in southern Spain, and they really defined the 17th century in Spain, along with Velázquez and other great painters. But I would say look carefully at all of the paintings, but maybe, yes, my heart leans a little bit toward Murillo.
Oh, I understand. And the painting you chose is actually one of the favorites of our guests when they come to the museum, so I understand why. So is there any specific takeaway that you would like guests to recognize when they come to the exhibit? You shared maybe a little bit about the theme and yes. why you chose it, but what's yes. the takeaway?
Well, one of the things is really to try to remember how powerful the Spanish Empire was. So I think we think often, you know, of Italy, France, or maybe I don't know, but, and we think of the Renaissance. So we think of these artistic hubs like Florence and Rome. But Spain was extremely influential politically, economically, and so it will be really nice to have that added dimension, or to remind people of how the empire was so powerful in the 16th, 17th century, and then it declined because of wars, you know, all sorts of other things, but really how the Spanish Empire expanded several countries and continents. So that is really important to remember. It's one thing that I want to, people hopefully will think, oh, okay, Spain. I'm also really excited that we will have all the wall text in Spanish as well, which is something that hopefully, again, kind of our efforts for inclusiveness and accessibility to information. And so we will have the text available on the walls in English and Spanish. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So then you have the wall text. What are the maybe other educational supports and programming that you've planned for this exhibit?
At the museum, we have something called Faculty Perspectives. And so this is when we invite a member of, you know, another college, another faculty to speak, because curators are always talking, and you know, there are other opinions out there that are very important. And so in this case, it will be Dana Baltman. She's the professor of Spanish in the Department of Romance Languages, and so she'll give a tour, hopefully in person or virtually in January. We're not sure of the format yet. We will also have the Spanish Short Film Festival in the spring, so that will be a nice complement. We've collaborated in the past with the School of Music, and again, we will have an in-gallery concert. It will very likely be sometime next summer, so in 2021 or September 2021, basically when we could start welcoming larger groups of people. I will give a curator talk in April, and so again, it's really a luxury when you can present an exhibition for a longer period of time, because you can really develop some interesting and fun program.
So what are the dates and the title of the exhibit?
Yes. So the title is Power and Piety in 17th Century Spanish Art, and it will run from November 14th, 2020 until November 28th, 2021. So a little bit over a year.
Right, and that should give people enough time to get to Georgia and see it. And if you're listening in Greenville, that's not far away at all, an hour, 45 minutes at the most. Yeah, that'd be good. Well, before we conclude, is there anything else that either of you would like to share, or maybe that you didn't get to say?
I think from a personal perspective, it's always powerful to see the works in person. So you may, you know, as a patron, you may see it advertised online, but I think one of the things that is so powerful is actually coming and experiencing it in person. So I know that right now it's not possible to go to a lot of places, so there's a lot more digital content, and that's fantastic. But I will also say that there's something about being right there in front of the piece that really speaks to you and can evoke some kind of emotional response that you didn't even know that you were going to have, that you wouldn't get just looking at something online. So I'm really excited that hopefully soon everything will be able to be opened a little bit more.
I do hope people get to come physically to the museum, because I agree with Becca, and I think all of us have been craving a kind of contact again. And to experience art virtually is one thing, to experience it in person is completely something else. And maybe after we've had this little talk or presentation, maybe people will be more mindful or will be aware of how much work goes into putting together an exhibition. And I say this more because I think about my dad, who still thinks we just hang stuff up. And why does it take so long? You just put a few nails and you just hang it up. So no, a lot of components go into this process, and it is so much a team effort. And I am very grateful to your museum, of course, for being so collaborative, but also to the museum community, who is always very collegial, and we always try to make everybody's dreams happen and agree to loans, bring these works of art out to the public as much as possible, so as many people as possible can enjoy them.
Hopefully, you now have a sense for the size and scope of the exhibition process. The logistical details, besides the content development, are plenty. As the keepers of history, stories, and messages from people through the ages, museums essentially tackle the challenge of being the mechanism to bring you those potentially lost communications through special displays. As you visit this new exhibition in person at the Georgia Museum of Art, or online, or any exhibit for that matter, apply what you've learned to appreciate an exhibition's features all the more.
If you are missing the art, or simply curious about what the museum and gallery is, visit our website at bjumg.org.